Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio is still a coal state, but how big of a role does coal still play in the politics of the Buckeye State? A crucial feather in the hat of any presidential candidate. Joining us now to talk about that is Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Good morning.
So you wrote about this last week. You made the point that there's only one reason Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney would visit Bealsville, Ohio last week, and it wasn't for the sheer number of voters.
Well, yeah, Bealsville is way out, kind of in the middle of nowhere, in a sense. It's about an hour away from Zanesville, so way out in eastern Ohio. My friends that were out there covering this event said it was it was in a coal mine, so it was down some winding roads and up some winding roads, and so it was really kind of remote. And so when you think about campaigning in a key swing state, why would a candidate go to some place so distant from major news outlets and the big cities? And certainly the coal country aspect is one big part of that. So that's the connection that I tried to make.
But is it what it once was when it comes to politics in the state of Ohio or anywhere? The president has not been making a big issue of it since his State of the Union address last year or early this year.
Well, it's interesting. Just in the last couple of weeks, I guess, it's really become an issue here. Coal Workers Union apparently has decided not at this point to take a position on endorsing either candidate. The United Mine Workers endorsed President Obama in 2008. And right now it seems that they're poised to not endorse either candidate. And so that implies that, you know, this vote is maybe up for grabs. Now, the United Mine Workers are members of the AFL-CIO, a very powerful labor union that's definitely supporting President Obama. So, you know, these are workers who potentially could be either side, in a sense. A lot of these workers are very concerned about the Obama administration's policies, and so they're worried about their jobs, and yet they're members of the AFL-CIO and union members. So it's a challenge for these particular voters, and we're getting to the point in Ohio where each group is important. These little groups of voters are going to be important to whoever wins Ohio.
They endorsed the United Mine Workers endorsed Barack Obama in 2008. They are sitting out or likely to sit this one out this year. Why the difference? Why the change?
I think it's because of concerns about the Obama administration's policies on clean coal. And now the Obama administration is saying that they've done a lot to help coal miners, that coal jobs are up. In fact, just in the last week or two, the Obama administration has been running an ad specifically targeting coal country that's been talking about the improvements to the job market in coal. Now, that, of course, has ticked off some environmentalists who don't believe there's anything that approximates clean coal, and they want the president to actually remove that ad. But these coal miners are kind of caught in the middle because, again, they're union members, but they're also concerned about their jobs, and they some of them don't feel that the Obama administration is going to be as supportive as maybe a Romney administration. So it's very tough for some of these workers.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. If you have a question or comment for her, we're talking about coal in Ohio and its impact on politics. Is it as strong as it once was? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. So it's just been the last couple of weeks, but there's been an uptick in interest in coal. What has the Obama administration done that damages the coal industry in Ohio? They're blaming layoffs on his administration.
Yeah, you've got the owner, Robert Murray, from Murray Energy, who's the owner of a mine that closed in Brilliant, Ohio, which is right along the Ohio River as you headed up to Steubenville. He laid the closing of that mine squarely at the foot of the Obama administration and said that it's their policies that are preventing him from keeping that mine open. And you know, you do have some folks who believe that, but then the Obama administration is coming back and saying, we've made huge investments in clean coal technology, $5 billion investment in it, one of the largest ever, coal jobs up 10%. And again, that's some statistics that have irritated environmentalists who want to see other investments in wind and solar and other kinds of alternative energy. So it's this whole debate over energy is becoming very critical, and you're seeing it even in other states, too. I know when President Obama and Governor Romney were in Iowa, there was a lot of debate about wind mm-hmm. technology and that sort of thing. So the issue of energy is a big deal.
What is they are supportive of the mining, the coal industry is supportive of Mitt Romney. Why? What has he done or said that impresses them?
Well, and it's interesting because in the particular ad that the Obama administration has been running, it recalls a press conference that Romney had a couple of years ago where he said that coal mines, or this particular coal plant, not mines, but a plant, kills people. And so, you know, you have a little bit of back and forth there about whether Mitt Romney has been supportive of coal, but I guess a lot of the attitude is almost not as much that Mitt Romney's been supportive. He certainly has been saying supportive things in the last couple of the last year or so, but that the Obama administration has had policies put into place that are of concern to coal mine operators and certain coal mine workers. So it's almost the devil you know versus the devil you don't in terms of that. I think there's a thought that, you know, if somebody new is in office who appears to, at least at this point in time, support some coal technologies, then maybe this would be better than the administration that they've been dealing with.
But usually it's the devil you don't know that you worry about. But in this case, maybe they're more encouraged by that. So what about coal as an industry in the state of Ohio? Really, we've been talking about for the last couple of years the shale, the fracking of shale deposits, gas deposits, and natural gas seems to be king in Ohio these days.
Yeah, but still, coal is the primary way that we get our electricity for the most part. 85-90% of our electricity comes from coal, something like that. And so it's still a big deal that that's really, coal mining is still extremely important in this region and certainly in coal country in Ohio. But yeah, obviously, and that's where the issue of the debate over other forms of energy comes into play, because you do have the shale, the Utica shale, Marcellus shale here in Ohio, and all the natural gas and the oil that could be coming out of that. And so these are important issues that are coming up in the presidential debate in general. And, you know, it's interesting to watch. But we're really, again, with the coal and the coal miners and the coal area, parsing almost individual voters, because every vote is going to count in the fall. It's absolutely certain.
How much does, you know, Ohio is a big coal state, but most of Ohio isn't part of the coal industry. How much does the endorsement of the Ohio Coal Association or any coal industry organization mean to the average Ohio voter outside of coal country?
Well, you can hear the ads about how much it's going to cost you to heat your home, or how much it's going to cost you to pay those bills. And so that's where they try to translate it and make it something that the average Ohioan can indeed look at. Because, yeah, most Ohioans don't work in coal mines. They don't have a real connection to the coal industry other than their electric bill. And so that's where I think a lot of that comes from, is that, you know, that targeting people with the idea of this is going to increase or decrease your home heating cost, or how much it costs to turn on the lights in your house.
If you want to give us a call and talk with Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, the number to call is 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. So the president did not mention coal per se in his State of the Union address. We mentioned that earlier. He is starting to run ads touting his coal record on coal. Is this a short term thing? Is this a long term? Is this going to be for till the end of the election, or what do you think?
I think it's fairly short term right now. I think the administration might have felt like they were getting hit pretty hard by Romney with regard to coal, and this radio ad specifically promotes what the president has done with the coal industry, coal jobs being up, and this investment in clean coal technology. But once again, you have the issue of people who are supporters, strong supporters of the president, who don't believe that this is something that he should be touting, that indeed there is no such thing as clean coal, according to some of these folks, and that the president shouldn't be talking about this as much as he should be talking about other investments in alternative energy. So it's almost a split even amongst supporters of the president in terms of whether he should be behind coal or not.
Does the big coal support of Mitt Romney have as much to do with individual voters as it does with campaign contributions or third-party organizations supporting his candidacy?
Well, and the coal industry, especially the big movers like Robert Murray, the owner of the mine that closed, he was also the owner of the mine where Mitt Romney campaigned last week. He owns several mines, obviously. He's been a big supporter, and his top officials have been big supporters of Republican candidates, big supporter of Romney himself, Robert Murray is. And so, you know, that's a big issue. And also you've seen super PAC ads over the last, I don't know, 6 months or so, where they've been touting that, or actually blasting the Obama administration for heavy-handed regulations and things that the industry feels like are going to increase energy costs and more regulation. It's going to cost them more to do their business.
Has the Obama administration been more heavy-handed than, say, its predecessor when it comes to regulation of the coal industry?
It depends on who you talk to. You know, and certainly people in the coal industry right now feel that the Obama administration has been. But then there are others who say that, no, he really hasn't been. And these are rules that are appropriate and need to be followed, and just kind of forcing what's been out there for quite a long time. So, yeah, it really does depend on who you talk to.
Andrew and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I believe that the path we should take is become independent of foreign sources of coal, oil, and other resources, and when we, in our independency, use research and to develop wind and air. For instance, if we continue to use petroleum and get ourselves back to the number one that we should be as far as a world power, then in the meantime, give the $500 million or whatever that are gone to small enterprises that are failing, better to rejuvenate Nassau, which is uses research and development.
Okay, well, wait, we're talking about coal right now.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. That's what I'm saying. We need coal to keep the economy rolling, and in the meantime, do the research and development for, because that's your argument, is that you're saying, why coal? And the argument is to maintain our economy now, so that 20 years from now, we can have the wind and solar. And,
okay, I see that it just keeps us independent from other sources while we develop other,
right,
going down the line.
Especially with Nassau. I can't believe that Nassau isn't being funded to do research and development for this stuff.
All right. Well, Andrew, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Thanks. Kieran Kastner.
I think he makes a really good point that you'll hear a lot of talk about, this idea of making Ohio and America energy independent and certainly relying on domestically produced sources of energy, and coal being a big one, especially for a lot of Republicans, because, again, there's a concern in amongst supporters of the president that maybe clean coal technology really is a misnomer, and that there are other ways to come up with alternative energy that don't involve coal. But that's a really interesting point. It's a very good point that he makes that we've heard, I think, both candidates talking about.
Exactly. That's why it was surprising that the president didn't mention it at the outside of the of the year, that, yeah, it's looking for clean coal technology, but in the meantime, no matter what, we have to support our coal industry.
Well, and it's troubling for him, I think, because of the concerns from environmentalists that clean coal technology is not a solution, that really there are other ways to get alternative energy is the way to go, and not with clean coal and other, quote, dirty technology.
So just one more question before I let you go.
Sure.
So he's kind of between a rock and a hard place. Uh-huh. Is Mitt Romney between a rock and a hard place, or is the environmental lobby not as important yet as the coal lobby?
Well, once again, Mitt Romney's words in the past have come back to haunt him, at least in this one particular ad that the president is running, where Romney has said in the past that he's been concerned about the role that coal-fired power plants are playing in terms of people's health. And so that's going to be an issue if that keeps coming up. You know, what Mitt Romney said back in 2008 about this plant kills people, that's a worry.
Well, we'll be listening to that to his statements on that score back in 2003. When we return, right now I want to say thanks to Kieran Kastner for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Karen Kassler, she's Bureau Chief of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Coming up, Mike Carey, he's President of the Ohio Coal Association. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station. We're on the radio, of course, but you can also listen anytime by streaming on the web at WOSU.org. Just click on the Listen Now button at the top of the page and enjoy 89.7 NPR News from the comfort of your computer, at work or at home. That's at WOSU.org. And support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners, investment managers, providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life, at sherringtongroup.com. 70 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today with a high of 82. Clear skies for tonight, a low of 56 degrees. Sunny and a high of 85 on Thursday. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Ohio is indisputably a coal state. It's a big coal state, but is it a big coal state in an election year? Does it matter anymore? Joining us now is Mike Carey. He is chairman of the Ohio Coal Association. Welcome to the show, Mike.
It's great to be with you this morning.
So most of Ohio is not part of the coal-producing region. Why should the rest of Ohio or even the rest of the nation care about the power of coal in Ohio?
You know, I think that Karen mentioned this when you were speaking with her earlier. The fact is that in Ohio, baseload generation is primarily dominated by coal-fired electricity. And so when you look at our region, if you look at the state of Ohio and you look at the cost of kilowatt hour compared to other states that have a lesser reliance on coal-fired based electricity, you see that they have higher electric rates. So it's an issue for all Ohioans, but particularly obviously those in eastern Ohio that are not only mining the coal, but those individuals that help supply the coal mines in those areas.
How many jobs are we talking about in the state of Ohio that are directly related to the coal industry?
Individual mining jobs, about 3,500, but according to Penn State, there's up to 11 spinoff jobs for every one coal-producing jobs. You have people that work on the materials in terms of fixing the equipment, the truckers, the people that operate the trains, and obviously the power-producing facilities. But I think the other thing you have to realize is if you look at Ohio and you look at where the coal is, you have coal in West Virginia, coal in Pennsylvania, coal in Kentucky, and you have a lot of Ohio miners that actually work in those states, but, you know, they live in Ohio.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mike Carey. He is chairman of the Ohio Coal Association. We're talking about coal and politics in Ohio. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You could email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there, or tweet us at WOSU All Sides. Okay, so the value of coal has been impacted by another booming industry in Ohio, natural gas. As natural gas is cheapened by the new sources such as the shale or the fracking, the new processes to extract it from the shale deposits. Is that hurting the coal business more than anything, or hurting its chops in the political arena?
No, I think what you find with natural gas and obviously the development of the Utica and the Marcellus shale in the region, you are seeing a tremendous amount of natural gas on the market. The thing about natural gas is it's a very volatile fuel. I believe it's trading at $2.40. Traditionally, if it's at $2.40 to $3, it's competitive with coal for baseload generation. The problem you have with natural gas is that it's a volatile fuel. It can go to 3 to 4 to 5. And just a few years ago, I remember on listening to some of these shows talking about gas at $9. So it's a fuel source. And in a deregulated state, and this is what people in Ohio have to understand, once you have a complete deregulated electric grid and consumers have to pay, they pay for the cost of fuel. So if you have it trading at $2.40, it may be fine today. But if it doubles to $4.80, the consumer is the one that's going to be paying that.
Let's talk about the Obama administration and its record on coal regulation and just basically regulation of the industry in general, not coal regulation per se. What particularly is the beef with the Obama administration? Is his administration's record on regulation any much different than his predecessor's?
Well, I think you have to go back in time, and you have to look back at the end of the election when he was with the San Francisco Chronicle saying, if you want to build a coal-fired power plant, you can, but it'll bankrupt you because we'll charge so much for the carbon tax. Then you have also at that time Joe Biden, who was a senator, saying we're not going to build any coal-fired power plants. So you have a lot of rhetoric from that side going into when they took office. Obviously, the appointment of Lisa Jackson as the EPA administrator, when she was the EPA administrator for the state of New Jersey, she had put a moratorium on coal-fired electricity. So I think what you've seen early on before he came into office was the comments. So then after that, what we saw was obviously the initial first round of trying to pass cap and trade, which mm-hmm. he was completely supportive of. And then after we saw that and we saw that that didn't happen, he went to the Rolling Stone magazine and said, look, we're not going to do any comprehensive energy legislation. We'll have to do it in piecemeal. So what we've then seen is the utility MAC, the CSAPR rule, which you saw, I think you mentioned, was just vacated. And then you also have the greenhouse gas NSPS, which is coming down the pike. And that's just on the consumption of coal. That's for coal-fired utilities. But when you have – then you have the regulations, the stream buffer zone rule variance that's actually being promulgated right now, which would effectively stop most of your underground mining operations. And now you have increased regulations on the exporting of coal. So they're not only getting us from the domestic market, which would be the power-producing facilities, but stopping us from mining. The Obama administration revoked a permit, I believe it was an ARCH permit in West Virginia, that obviously that was also overturned. So there is a long history of not being a coal-friendly president.
And yet he's previous to this year put on, well, they've said that coal jobs are up 10% and that a $5 billion investment in clean coal technology is one of the largest ever. Obviously, those particular assertions don't earn any points, no. Or at least don't move you that much.
Not at all. I think if you look at the counties that are affected by coal mining, the people that are the men and women that are working in those mines every day, if you look at the region of Ohio, they're taking a snapshot. You can't reduce jobs 500 in the state of Ohio, reduce jobs in West Virginia. I think West Virginia Coal Association came out with something today that I believe they've lost 2,000 jobs. And the bottom line is, since this president has taken office, domestic coal production was at 1.2 billion tons, 1.2. According to the Energy Information Agency, by the end of this year, we're going to be producing about 808 million. You can't lose a third and think that you've been helpful to the coal industry.
Let's turn our talk to Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. There's an ironic online petition asking the president to pull an ad that criticizes Mitt Romney, his GOP opponent, and notes that in 2003 he held a press conference in front of a coal plant saying that he would, and I quote, not create jobs or hold jobs that kill people, and that plant kills people. He said this turning around and pointing at the plant. Right. The online petition is by environmentalists asking the president to pull the ad because they believe what Mitt Romney said was true. It feels like Alice through the looking glass right now to talk about this way, but why are you confident that Mitt Romney, given his past opinions, which are very forceful, particularly in that case, isn't just saying what you want him to hear, what he wants you to hear?
You know, and you make a very good point, but I think you have to look at the specifics around what the governor was saying at that time. He was looking at one in particular plant. He wasn't simply saying that we need to put all of these plants out of commission. He was looking at one particular plant. I think he probably would like to choose his words a little more carefully the next time he did that. But I think the issue is if you look at the totality of regulations that we have coming down the pike, the ones that we're in litigation on, the ones that are coming and would come in another 4 years, I think that's why you're seeing people say, look, he made a comment in Massachusetts a few years ago, but look at the scope of work that this administration has currently done to hurt the American coal industry.
Nancy in Columbus, you're on the air on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you. I have been listening, and one of the things that bothered me about Romney's visit, and I think the coal industry could have steered him to a different mine, was he visited a mine owned by Murray Energy, and as it was reported, Murray complained about rules and regulations stifling jobs, But Murray Energy is the owner of the mines in West Virginia and Utah that blew up because they had so many violations. So I want to know how the coal industry supports the regulations that pertain to safety for our miners.
Now, I thought the International Coal Group, is that different than, is that the one that owns the mine in Sago, West Virginia, where in 2000?
It was Murray Energy at the time. I followed Murray Energy.
Okay.
The mine blew up in Utah.
Mike Carey, Ohio Coal Association?
You know, I would tell you, I think everybody that's involved in the coal industry understands that you need to have safe regulations, and you need to have regulations that protect the workers. Obviously, you need to have a productive mine, and in order to do that, you need to have a productive workforce. The state of Ohio has done a fantastic job over the years of developing mine safety and mine safety rescue teams. We have one of the top-notch training facilities, which is located in Cadiz, Ohio. So, you know, I think Ohio has done a lot. I think that the Ohio coal industry has done a lot to make sure we ensure safety of our miners.
But do regulations also help when it comes to the safety of our miners?
Well, I think you have to be reasonable with any regulation, but certainly I think the regulations that we have in place now are doing the things that need to be due to keep those miners safely and being able to return safely home to their families.
Dwayne in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dwayne.
Oh, thank you. Ohio is number two. Kentucky's number one in pollution. Tell us how the coal industry is paying their fair share in taxes.
To compensate for the pollution that you say they have? Okay.
I would say the one thing you have to understand is that so many times, and people get confused between the coal industry and the power the utility industry. Obviously, the coal industry wants to have the cleanest of the clean plants, because if you have a clean plant, you can burn coal in it, and that makes sense. You want to have the upgrades, and when some of these power producing facilities try to put on some of these upgrades, they're sued through extreme environmental groups because they don't want them to continue to use coal in those power-producing facilities. And I think one fact, and he brings up a point, I mean, I do think that when you look over, according to the EIA, by 2016, we're going to lose roughly 175 coal-fired power plants, primarily in the Midwest. So I think what people really have to be concerned about,
we're going to lose those because?
We'll lose those because of the rules that are currently in place.
Okay.
And the ones that are being promulgated. So if, in fact, we lose that and you lose 10% of your generating capacity, ultimately what's going to happen is folks in Grove City or folks in Dublin, folks in Columbus or anywhere in the state of Ohio, for that matter, are going to see higher electric rates. And that's a tough thing. One thing that people don't seem to understand is that 50% of this country spends 25% of their disposable income on energy. And that's gas, that's fuel to heat their home, but that's electricity. And when you have people on fixed incomes, that can really hurt.
Dwayne, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Yeah, hello. And I'll apologize if I'm repeating a question. I picked up the show a little late. For your guest, I guess my question would be, in general, I'm not the biggest fan of coal, but it's something which is there and it's something which is needed right now and, you know, for a fair amount of time in the future. One thing which disturbed me is he was speaking of the regulations currently in effect and the regulations that are projected in the future if things would continue, that severely restrict the use of the existing coal-powered power plants. And my understanding, and perhaps he could correct me, is that with the existing plants, they've already made very significant improvements in reducing pollution. My concern is that if you force existing plants to keep adding on more and more equipment, there's a law of diminishing return. The more gadgets you add, the less effect it has to clean it up, and it just eats up huge amounts of energy, which requires more digging of coal. So it's actually retrofitting too many gadgets on an old plant is unenvironmental. So to me, the thing that might make sense in his thoughts, I wonder, would be grandfather the existing plants, let them run through their useful life cycle. They've already been improved as much as they can, and then just require the brand new plants to have the highest technology. To me, that seems like the reasonable course to take, and wonder his thoughts on that.
You know, I think you made a lot of good points. I think, first off, the new standards that are being discussed, that's the greenhouse gas NSPS standard. The issue is that any new power plant that would be built, this would be on greenhouse gases, and to try to make it would basically mean that the greenhouse gas emissions from a coal-fired power plant would have to be equal that to a natural gas facility or any other facility for that matter. And currently, right now, that is, you cannot meet that standard. But as far as the criteria pollutants, I agree with you. I think we need to continue to put those pollution control devices on the power plants that it makes sense to put them on. But again, you can't operate in an economy and under the cloud of picking winners and losers in energy. And the problem that utilities have is that they don't know. They don't know what the rule is going to be in 4 years, or they don't know what the rule is going to be in 2 years. And there's a lot of discussion. They just simply don't know, so it's easier to close down.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. The West owners of the West Bird Mine, which closed earlier this month, costing about 56 jobs, they blamed that closure on the president and on U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. You've already talked to me and told us about why the president and his administration is behind some of these things. Specifically, though, what does the West Bird Mine have to do with, federal policies?
Well, I think what you have to look at, again, you have to look at, again, the list of regulations that have come down the pike. The one time that Senator Brown, I know he's going to be a guest, could have really stood up for the coal miners and obviously the folks in eastern Ohio, but all of Ohio, was the Inhofe CRA, a congressional resolution that would have stopped the implementation of the Utility MAC. The Utility MAC will be devastating to not only Ohio's coal-fired electricity units, but also to the overall economy. And it was a simple up or down vote. And, you know, we had Democrat support of that, Joe Manchin out of West Virginia, Nelson. But we also had some Republicans that didn't support it. So it would have been nice to have Senator Brown support of that. But going back into looking at the list of regulations, when you, again, go from an economy or a market that was at 1.2 billion tons down to 808 million tons, clearly the direction that this administration is going is affecting the marketplace. And ultimately, the mines will close. We've seen it not just in Ohio, but in western Pennsylvania and also in West Virginia as well.
Does the coal industry pretty much across the board support Republicans and oppose Democrats when it comes to politics? Or are there places like maybe West Virginia, Kentucky, that sort of place where it's not necessarily the case?
Well, you know, you were talking earlier, too, about the politics of coal. And if you look at southeastern eastern Ohio, it's traditionally a very heavily Democrat area of the state. It has just recently tended to vote on issues such
heavily as heavily Democratic because of the United Mine Workers, for one thing.
Steel workers, mine workers. And just
and those are
historic.
All going away because the industries have.
Well, I think you're seeing, you still have a lot of miners, you still have a lot of steel workers, you still have a lot of people, but you have that, historically, that is a Democratic region of the state. It went in 2004, I believe it went for Kerry, but in 2008, slightly to McCain. And this is way before anybody knew about the bankrupting comments or Vice President Biden's comment on that coal was more deadly than high fructose corn syrup.
Or terrorists.
Yeah, I forgot about that one, unfortunately.
Okay, James, we can take one more question. James in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, James.
Hey, listen, I was just wondering. We have this guy, and he's speaking, and he's obviously a company man, and that's great, but I was wondering about the opposing side, because I'm a UAW member, and it's always when we need the coal, for instance, safety goes out the door. But when times slow down, safety's the number one issue. And, I mean, I guess it's all right to make a profit. Everybody likes money, but not at the risk of people's lives.
We've been talking about safety regulations for workers. Are you saying that it's at the expense of their safety that profits are made? What's your point?
Well, this is the thing. They just had those guys die in the coal mine, two or three years ago. Mm-hmm. And from my opinion, Romney is representing the owners of the coal mines. You know, I mean, you have to have some kind of rules and regulations or people are going to die.
Okay.
And, you get, I mean, the other thing is this. AEP, the electric company, they give Mitt Romney money for his campaign. So they're all connected. He's connected with the owners.
Okay.
So, and there's no opposing side.
Okay. Well, James, you're bringing up a lot of stuff here. Let's just go back to the issue of the safety of the workers versus the profits. Mike Carey, want to address that again?
Profitability.
Thank you, by the way.
Profitability of a coal company is going to be predicated on the market. Safety is never an issue because you have to abide by the federal rules on safety, and no coal mine operator wants to vacate any of those rules. I mean, they're completely supportive of it. You want to have a healthy workforce going into the mine, period. The biggest thing for the economy of coal is where is the market going to be? And again, if I said the number once, I've said it 1,000 times. You go from 1.2 billion down to 800 million. You're seeing the price of coal slip because obviously the economy hasn't completely turned around, but also for the simple fact that we're closing down by 175 power producing facilities by 2016. The market is shrinking, so that does more for profitability for a coal company than anything else.
Mike Carey, thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be with you.
Mike Carey, he's chairman of the Ohio Coal Association. Coming up, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Congressman Aiken steps in it. Congressman Yoder swims in it. The Obama camp burns cash faster than it can pull it in. Republicans hope for a convention bump, and all sides complain about the other guy's nasty campaign. I'm Neal Conan. Join us for another edition with the Political Junkie, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation is this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And stay with us in just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour 2 of All Sides. And voting hours, how much do they matter? And why have they changed in Ohio? All Sides with Ann Fisher will take a closer look with Secretary of State John Husted and one of the Montgomery County election officials suspended for supporting weekend voting. That's in Hour 2 of All Sides at 11 on 89.7 NPR News. And if you're looking for an easy way to support our station, how about joining our Sustaining Giving Program? The ongoing support of sustaining members saves 89.7 NPR News time and money and helps us focus more of your support on news programming. Make every dollar count. Become a sustainer today. Visit WOSU.org/sustainer. And it's 70 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today with a high of 82. Clear skies for tonight, a low of 56 degrees. More sunshine on Thursday and a high of 85. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about coal, the coal industry in Ohio, and its political power in Ohio this hour. Joining us now is U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. He's a Democrat who's been the target of a 30-second commercial produced by Crossroads GPS. It's a Republican independent organization co-founded by Karl Rove. Among other things, the ad accuses Senator Brown of supporting cap and trade, which, and I quote, could have cost Ohio over 100,000 jobs. As usual, we also invited Senator Brown's Republican challenger, first-term state treasurer Josh Vandel, or one of his surrogates, to join the conversation. They did not respond to our request. So welcome to the show, Senator Brown.
Good to be here. Thanks. Good to be with you.
Let's talk about the commercial first and cap and trade. That is a regulatory system. It's intended to curb greenhouse gas emissions. It offers utilities and industrial manufacturers a way to reduce their emissions. You actually voted against it in 2008, and in 2010 it never reached the Senate floor, which is where you work. What's the criticism with you and cap and trade? What do you make of that?
Well, what I make of it is it's one of a long line of money, of big money ads from out of state. Unidentified. We figure it's the oil industry. We figure it's the Wall Street banks that are spending money in these attacks. They spent more against me than any Senate race in the country, $15 million already. and counting, and again, undisclosed secretive money from these interest groups. And they've been found, as the cap and trade comment was, these ads have been found by PolitiFact and FactCheck.org and some of these nonpartisan organizations to just be full of falsehood. So not only is it $15 million coming in, and I'm not whining. I mean, I'm a big boy. I can take it. But so many of these ads simply aren't true. You know, in many ways, there's an old saying. Where I grew up in Richland County working on a family farm. It's an old saying, if you throw a rock at a pack of dogs, the one that yelps is the one you hit. And the oil industry doesn't much like me, and Wall Street doesn't much like me, and I can live with that, but people need to know that.
The coal industry doesn't much like you either. They say you didn't stand up for the coal industry when you could have.
Well, what the coal industry has is, as you pointed out with that last discussion, the coal industry has become an arm of the Republican Party politically in eastern Ohio. I mean, the guy that is one of the most outspoken anti-Obama people owns one of the big coal companies that had some safety issues, I would add. He's very Republican. He's brought a number of coal operators with him. But I was in Belmont County and Tuscarora County and that region of the state the last few days and a couple days ago. And they're not buying his act. The fact is, there are more coal jobs today in Ohio than there were 5 years ago. And for them to say Barack Obama's anti-coal or that I'm anti-coal is all about their political agenda. They want Mitt Romney, who will weaken coal mine safety rules. They want Mitt Romney because he is not, they create this false choice that you either have good jobs or you have good environmental policy. And frankly, you can have both. And I think we've moved in that direction. The best example of that, Ann, is what's happened in the auto industry. Because we pushed the auto industry to do better in emissions and in cleaner emissions, and we push the auto industry to do better mileage per gallon, the American public can drive cleaner, safer, higher mileage cars now, and the auto industry is profitable. So this whole false kind of choice, it's either the environment or it's jobs, is just wrong. It serves the miners, the coal company owners' interests, because they want weaker rules and weaker laws and more profits than non-union miners. And they don't much care about safety. In many cases, they've shown they don't care enough about safety.
My guest is U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, and we're talking about coal in Ohio and the coal industry and politics. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. I just want to let people know we did invite Senator Brown's Republican challenger, Josh Mandel, to the show, as we always do. We also invited to have one of his surrogates on the show if he couldn't make it. They did not respond to our request. So the United Mine Workers are sitting this one out. What do you make of that, and how much damage does it do to your argument?
Well, I don't know that that's the case.
So far,
but a lot of groups have said it out so far. I challenge that. I wouldn't make that case. I met with the mine workers the other day. The mine workers, I've worked with them for years. I care about, as so many of us that are Democrats that have fought side by side alongside organized labor for stronger mine safety. I wear on my lapel many people that, and I apologize for those listening who've heard this, but I wear in my lapel a canary in a birdcage. It's a depiction of a canary. The mine workers take canary down in the mines, and if the canary died, the mine worker, who had no union in those days to protect him 100 years ago and had no government that cared enough, the mine worker was on his own. And the canary died, the mine worker got out of the mine. And what that signifies to me is worker safety. I've worn that pin for 15 years. I wear it. A lot of my colleagues wear a pin signifying that they're a U.S. senator on their lapel. I wear my lapel pin that has a canary in the cage because it signifies everything from Medicare to safe drinking water to clean air to Social Security to minimum wage to workers' compensation, all the issues that I have fought for, but more importantly, the mine workers and other unions and other people in their church basements and in their ethnic organizations have fought for to create a stronger middle class. So I take a backseat to nobody in supporting coal miners, in supporting workers, in supporting the people of eastern Ohio. And my vote totals have always illustrated that. I win big in eastern Ohio, and I'm going to win big again no matter that my opponent, interestingly, won't even come on this show and talk because he's hiding behind the $15 million from Carrove and the oil industry and Wall Street and all that. And that's the game. You know, I'm out talking to people. He's out hiding behind that kind of big money.
You probably read the Rolling Stone article from March 16th that entitled "Has Big Coal Lost Its Power Regarding Politics?" What do you make of that?
I have not read that article. Sorry.
Okay. Well, they're saying that the word coal has pretty much disappeared from the president's speeches, and of course, in the last few recent weeks, not the case. But he didn't really mention it at all in his State of the Union address. Is coal?
I don't get that. I mean, this guy in Eastern Ohio has made it his life's work to defeat Barack Obama. And spent a lot of how much money, lots of money. We don't know how much because this is so much of this money's undisclosed. And I suppose he spent it against me too. But the fact is that the president and I have supported millions of dollars and tens of millions of dollars in research for clean coal. This crowd and the Romney Ryan ticket, you can bet that much of this research will grind to a halt. When you want to do more tax cuts for the rich and you want to increase defense spending, as the Romney-Ryan ticket wants to do, and as my opponent seems to want to do when he's out, the few times he's out actually talking to the press, and it means you're going to cut research. You're going to cut medical research on black lung disease. You're going to cut research on clean coal. And for them, it's all about for the people that are spewing all this rhetoric about that the government's anti-coal, president or that I am, it's all about compromising mine safety. It's all about making more profits. It's all about the same. It's all about more tax cuts for the rich and cuts to programs that these mine workers and their families need, union and non-union mine workers alike need. And I support all of them and that research and the health care surrounding it. And you know what happens if Romney wins. You know what happens to Medicare. You know what happens to medical research. And that's going to hurt the Ohio Valley, Belmont, Monroe, Guernsey, Jefferson, Carroll County, all those counties, that's going to hurt them more than anything that they accuse Barack Obama of doing.
Travis in Columbus, you're on the air with U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. Welcome to the show, Travis.
Hi, thank you for taking my question, Senator. I just had a quick question. You say that nobody takes a back seat to you when it comes to protecting the coal industry.
Have
you introduced to protect Ohio's coal jobs? And can you elaborate on this false choice between jobs and good environmental policy you speak of? Because it seems to me like you're making a choice to support environmental policies over jobs legislation when it comes to this issue.
Okay. Thank you, Travis.
I assume the caller is Josh Mandel's press secretary, whose name is Travis, but I don't want to jump.
Okay. Well, my screener didn't catch that one, if that's the case.
The question's still a legitimate question. The fact is, yes, the answer is that it is a false choice between good economic policy and good environmental policy. And if Travis had listened to what I said in the auto industry, we've seen that. And we'll see it in other industries, too. But we know that Ohio, you know, there's three ways to create wealth. One is to grow it, one is to mine it, and one is to make it. Ohio's number three in the country in manufacturing. Only California and Texas, much larger states than ours, than we are, make more things than we do. We are one of the leading ag states in the country. I'm the first senator in the ag committee in 40 years from Ohio. One out of eight jobs in Ohio is related to food and agriculture. And that's where I've worked on the farm bill in a way that's really good for Ohio and creating jobs. And third is we mine it. And I take a backseat to nobody, using the phrase that Travis used, on what we're doing to make sure these jobs from shale development that the jobs are Ohio jobs, not Texas and Oklahoma jobs. I've worked with Eastern Gateway Community College, worked with Stark State in Canton, worked with Zane State in Cambridge and Zanesville to make sure these jobs that we can train people so these oil jobs, these jobs in the oil gas fields go to Ohio workers. And that's what's so important in this. And part of the problem for coal right now, and I don't know if Mr. Kerry explained this because I didn't hear the whole interview, is that the price of natural gas is now so low because of the abundance of natural gas that's being pulled out of the ground that it's harder for coal to compete with gas prices so low.
and more utility companies are using coal gas as their fuel to generate electricity than coal. That's not good for coal. I hope that we can reach an equilibrium there, but that's what's happened. It's not quote-unquote Barack Obama's war on coal. It's the natural gas prices and a whole lot of other things that happened, frankly, during the Bush administration when they didn't really, there was no accusation of there being war on coal, but we saw coal jobs decline during those years, and now coal jobs picking up during the Obama years. Not as much as we'd like, but I'm going to continue to fight for those workers.
Okay, sorry, we were not able to confirm whether that was Travis with the Mandel campaign, so sorry about that. Hung up before we could get to him. Abe in Worthington, we're running out of time, but I wanted to squeeze you in. Welcome to the show, Abe.
Yeah, the thing the senator spoke exactly about the question that I had about the gas, because it seems to me that the gas, especially when the administration here in the state is pushing the gas, it's going to impact the coal. The other thing is that coal has additional problems. The railroads transport coal, which employs a lot of people, et cetera, et cetera. On the other hand, gas comes through pipeline with fewer people than there is the barges.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this thing is much greater than just the workers in Belmont County or whatever, not in southeastern Ohio or whatever. It's much bigger.
Correct. And I actually spoke with the CEO of CSX yesterday about some of these issues, and they are transporting a little less coal now, and he's a Republican. I don't know that he is, but I assume he might be. And he wasn't saying it was Obama at all. Is that they were transporting more coal? He said it's because of the price of natural gas. And I hear that from executives all over, and anybody that knows this issue, that they don't focus on blaming a single elected official on what's happened with coal. It's been a long term problem with coal, a long term decline in coal jobs. But we've seen a growth in coal jobs in the last few years, and obviously my opponent nor the Romney people want to acknowledge that coal's doing slightly better. They'd rather just blame everything on environmental reasons. But again, I just don't subscribe to the view that you can't have good public health and good jobs, because in the end, I want my kids to have clean air, and I want the friends that I have in eastern Ohio to have those mining jobs, and I want to continue to work on research for clean coal.
U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks, Anne. Glad to.
Once again, we did invite a representative or Josh Mandel himself, the Republican opponent challenging U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. They did not respond to our request for the interview. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Bill Hader is nominated for an Emmy for his work on Saturday Night Live. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with him about his characters, including Stefan, the gay nightlife correspondent. Hader's co-writer often adds lines in his cue cards at the last minute just to make him laugh on air.
When I walk into work, the cue card guys are like, "Hey, we just read the Stefan. Oh, boy." You know what I mean?
Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus. And streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media. And you can discover more about All Sides with Ann Fisher at WOSU.org/allsides. From our website, you can listen and watch the show live weekdays from 10 a.m. to noon. You can also explore the All Sides archive, which includes audio, video, and podcasts of every show. That's WOSU.org/allsides. 74 degrees at 1 minute before 11 o'clock. Sunshine today, a high right around 82. Clear skies for tonight and a low of 56 degrees. Sunny and back up to a high of 85 for Thursday. More sunshine and a high of 87 on Friday. And good morning. It's 11 o'clock.
Already an important swing state considered crucial to any presidential candidate's success story, Ohio was front and center in the news last week for its voting hours policies.
The latest twist on this has Republicans in Ohio restricting early voting hours on Democratic counties, but extending early voting hours in the Republican ones.
Coming up, we'll hear from two characters at the center of this story, Secretary of State John Husted and one of the Montgomery County elections officials who voted to defy his directive to end early voting the Friday before Election Day. That's coming up after the news on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News and streaming online at WOSU.org/allsides.